Welcome to First 7-Inch Club, episode 33, The Big Larry Bird. We're here, 33. each episode on this podcast, we dig up a 7-inch by a forgotten or obscure band within the realms of hardcore, punk, and metal, and discuss whether or not they're worth being remembered. We also provide factoids and trivia that we glean from the internet and our own personal experiences. Although we don't personally consider ourselves know-it-alls or experts, many other people do. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
Mike, I don't know if you know this, but today is my birthday.
Yes.
It's my actual birthday, and I don't make any friends acknowledge my birthday. And I did everything I could to stop Facebook from knowing it was my birthday, but my mom's on there, and she knows my birthday. But the reason I bring it up is because finally, after maybe 25 years, I got a Viennetta cake. when I heard that Viennetta had made a comeback, other places than here, because we're always last, like this area, this might as well be a developing nation or something when it comes to novelty foods. We get everything last, but Viennetta finally made it, and I've been asking for it for years. I had to get it myself, but I did achieve a Viennetta cake. Not as good as it used to be.
That's what I've heard.
Or my tongue has altered. It's like eating milk with chocolate layers. there's almost no vanilla flavor. You know, I was expecting it to have like that cheap, you know, soft serve vanilla flavor. It doesn't even have that. It's like, they used to sell that. It's been a long time, but there was like a trend probably just before like frozen yogurt got big where they were selling ice milk.
Yep.
Like as a, like, a, I don't know if it was supposed to be better for you or what, but it was ice milk was the thing and you would get it. And it was like you were eating frozen milk. It tasted kind of like just plain old milk, and they just put a little bit of sugar in it, and that sucked.
Yeah.
But Mike, I also wanted to applaud you for not giving in to any of those liberal cucks, because you kept your Death Metal for Normies playlist on Spotify. Like, you didn't give in no matter what the forces rallying around you were demanding. You kept it on there. How's it working out for you?
Well, first of all, Shelby did not read my... Well, he read the reviews, but the whole joke is I'm the normie in the equation. And I understand not wanting other normies to be into death metal, but it's too late, Shelby. It's happening. Yeah. We're here. I see it all over the fucking place. So you're going to have to deal with it, man.
It's like a ghost pepper. It's like a flavor on the hot sauce bar now that people can have if they want. They can have an 80s night. They can have a goth night. They can have a death metal night.
Yes.
It's done. There's nothing. I don't think there's anything that's hidden from the normies anymore if they feel like having it. They can have harsh noise, they can have power electronics, they can have racist industrial, they can do whatever they want these days. Mm-hmm. Nothing is out of the reach of a normie with an internet connection.
Yeah, you could be a normal person, you just make one typo on Spotify and you're entering a whole new realm of music that you never knew about. So it's pretty easy these days.
Well, it's a good playlist. I'm glad you're there. What do you have a plan for your next band already? Or are you done? Are you tapping out?
So here's the deal. We're talking about, if you're new to this show, I've been doing this project where I've been listening to every single Corpse Grinder era Cannibal Corpse record for the past 2 months. Never listened to them before. I wrote up a little thing about them, and I sent it to my friend Nathan, who does a zine. So hopefully it'll be printed in his zine Soda Killers one of these days. But the thing is, I can't listen to death metal at home. I don't like... My fucking girlfriend would not be cool with it, for one, but for two, I'm a weirdo and I wouldn't even play it around my cats because I don't think cats like aggro music and I wouldn't want to bum them out. And so I only listen to death metal in my headphones when I'm like commuting or, you know, walking somewhere. And I did not really factor in that it's really miserable listening to purposely miserable music while it's like fucking 0 degrees to minus 20 out walking around. So it was a test for me to do this. So I'm going to wait for it to get a little warmer. That's for one. And then I think I'm going to tackle Suffocation after this.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I would have gone with Monstrosity just to stick with Corpse Grinder.
Yeah.
Just Corpse Grinder albums.
Yeah.
They only have like 6 albums. You would have been done in a week and a half.
Well, I got a lot of stuff. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff because just spoiler alert, it's going to take us about 3 seconds to talk about this band because I chose this record as a joke, as a one note joke that only I would find funny to upset Scott. And I did not really take into consideration how short this band's songs were, and they only had 3 tracks on the record, so it's going to be a really short review when we get to it, so I had a lot of stuff to talk about. So last episode was with Gray, and we did the record Convicted by the band Convicted by their record Unconquered. And I said that a guy named Rob, listener and friend, said it was the greatest tough guy record to come out of Chicago, and he heard the episode and walked it back. And he said, "Hey, you took my recommendation a little too seriously." It's like, dude, it's on the internet. Like, you said it was you didn't say it's the best wink wink or the best quotation marks. You just said it's the best. So I don't know what to tell you, but you know, I think we're fair. I think he enjoyed it, so that's good. next up, a little old school for the old school Border Boss listeners. Quick little, I guess, Taco Bell review. I don't really know if this is like a nationwide product or if it's only for the quote unquote Cantina Taco Bells, because it has Cantina in the name. But I stopped to get some drunken Taco Bell the other day, and they have two new menu items with Cantina in the name. They're both the same thing, basically. It's Cantina Crispy Chicken Taco with Chipotle or with Avocado Ranch. So, Scott, are you aware of these in your area?
They are on the menu. They're on the menu, but I haven't been over there yet.
Okay, so they do exist. Okay.
Yeah.
So, because the deal, like the Taco Bell I go to was technically a Cantina, and they lost their liquor license within 3 months and just never got it back, which I think is the story of most Taco Bell Cantinas, that they just, after a while, apparently having teens serve alcohol is never a good idea. So they lose their liquor license like fucking immediately, and they just never get them back. But so I went there, and these tacos are $2.29. It's in a soft shell taco, and it's basically quote unquote crispy chicken inside a soft shell taco with lettuce, tomato. I don't think there's any sour. No, there's lettuce, tomato, cheese, and then the either the chipotle or the avocado ranch. This basically equates to just a chicken nugget inside a tortilla shell for $2.29. I think it's a little steep. It's I remember McDonald's used to do wraps like this too, I think. And I think even there they were cheaper. Obviously this was years ago, but I do think $2.29 for what equates to a chicken, like somewhere between a chicken nugget and a chicken finger, because it's a little smaller than a chicken finger but a little bigger than a chicken nugget. I think this is a little too much. The ones I had, the chicken inside was real dry. Like they fucking fried it up 3 days beforehand, and they were just sitting around waiting for a sucker to go order it like me. And so it wasn't good. I would not recommend this possible new Taco Bell menu item.
Yeah, well, they did this. It was a few months ago. They did basically put like one chicken tender in a wrap and tried to get $2.50 out of you.
Yeah.
Man, and mine was absolutely pathetic. Mine was a chicken nugget. They put it in a wrap, so you have something to measure it by. You're holding the measuring stick in your hand. You unwrap it, and the thing is halfway across the wrap. I could see what you did. I could see that you messed up. So, I'm more interested in. There's like a flaming hot taco somewhere out there on the horizon that I heard about, and they don't seem to have that anywhere yet. But that's probably the next thing that I care about.
Yeah, at least if you're going to sell this Cantina thing, at least offer me a 4-piece of these chicken nuggets with a sauce or something. Just do that, man.
Why don't they just put them in a sleeve? I guess that's a bridge towards just being McDonald's at that point, so they can't do it.
Can't do it. Let me get the plugs out of the way first. First, our Instagram, First 7-Inch Club, it's picking up. We got a few new followers. I'd like to get a lot more new followers, so go follow us on Instagram, First 7-Inch Club. I post about the show. I post flyers, post 7-inches sometimes that aren't going to be on the show. It's a fun time. It's an easy way to communicate with us and send us stuff, because I know people hate email these days. If you want to email us, though, it is for 7-Inch Club. These are all letters in this. I did start out Twitter that I tweet every once in a while. That's at First 7-Inch Club, too, so you could follow us there. But most importantly, we have a Facebook that's already dying. It's already on its deathbed after a couple weeks.
It was quick.
Yeah, it's a Facebook group. I know a lot of people are not down with Facebook, so I don't blame you. But if you are on Facebook, it's just, search for 7-Inch Club. It should pop up. I don't think there's more than one, so you'll see the logo and just hit join, and somebody will accept you, and you could talk even more to us if you'd like. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, there's a YouTube that's also a for 7-Inch Club.
I encourage people to talk bullshit on there. I mean, it's not begging. I'm not begging you. I'm just saying, like, if you feel like we're going to be asking you why you're saying this, or this is not on topic, or any of that nonsense, it's supposed to be really stupid. Our show is a little bit stupid. Everything about us is a little bit stupid. So you can go in there and post your sandwich if you want. I don't really care. Just Yes. Say whatever you feel like saying, Anna. And you know, one of us will have your back. We're about that. We're about like wasting our time on the internet. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, me and Scott are message board veterans. Like we have the Virtual Pros Discord, which has a little music section for for 7-inch club people, but we are, you know, our hearts and minds are in the message board. And the Facebook group is the closest we can get to a message board, and so we can deal with all manners of stupid posting in a message board forum. So, so give us what you got. It's no holds barred. You just tell us about your day. So no sob story shit. I don't really, not into sob stories, but anything else. It's no holds barred. I knew this episode would be short. So I was scrambling for topics. So this topic is dumb, but what are you going to do? It's what I've, kind of taken up the last week of my time is I started reading the Mark Gruenwald run of Captain America, which took place between about 1985 and 1995. And this is the most bonkers shit I've ever read in a comic book. Like, it's one of those things that probably wasn't that strange in 1985. But reading it now with the mind of a person in 2022, it is some of the most ridiculous comic work I've ever read. I like Google it. Like, if you Google like Captain America, Mark Gruenwald, you'll get several articles that are like, this is the epic run of Captain America. And they never hint towards how hilariously silly it is, because it's very silly. It's about basically Captain America. And he's also, he's like, he gallivants around town. He's the cartoonist for the Captain America comic book and, for Marvel Comics. And, but somehow they don't know that it's Captain America writing it, even though I assume he would be drawn the same way in the comic book. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of stuff like that. It's a lot of thought bubbles that are either their exposition, their narrative, their things you never want to like know, even from your best friend. Like there's I forget which issue it is, but there's two whole pages, like 12 panels of Captain America trying to think of what day it is. And this is a fucking Marvel comic, like a Marvel superhero comic. There's a lot of stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff that is just like it's a very aw shucks Captain America, but every woman in the comic book wants to have sex with him. And it's like, it's the most like, you know, it's very PGG rated. You know, I want him to jump my bones, but it's there. But he's like an aw golly, and it could be played as like, He's the only person in the white supremacist group that doesn't know he's a white supremacist, basically, because like all his villains in the 80s were guys who would be heroes now, because it's like his main villain in this run is a guy named Flag Smasher, who is against nationalism. And that's a bad thing in this. Like, this whole thing is like Captain America wants to stop this guy who's against nationalism. There's so many murders, and there's like I don't want to disparage Mark Gruenwald. He passed away at a very young age, but like, it's written in a way that I don't think you would get a writing job these days. And again, it's like a different time. I know comics were very broad. They had to be very, very broad back then. They were still somewhat for children, but it's like, I don't know, man. It's like very literal. Like everything that comes out of everybody's mouth is very literal. There's entire like issues of like Captain America going back and forth with a moral quandary, and then at the end just being like, I don't want to do it. And then the comic book ends. And it's just like, you can't end. Like, you have to go have the battle now. And it's like, I don't want to do the battle. And it just ends. And it's just like, the fuck? Like, it's so much shit like that. Paul Neary, I think, is the penciler on this. I don't know how long that lasts, but I'm like only about 20 issues deep, but like it's very bold. Like, the coloring is very bold and his line work is very bold. Every single fucking panel is like a work of art. It's taking all the fiber of my being to stop from making a no context Captain America account where I just post these panels, because there are so many like amazing one-shot panels. But I don't know. I assume there's still illegal ways to read comic books on the internet. Personally,
It's super easy, right?
Yeah. I have Marvel Unlimited. It's like 60 or 70 bucks a year, depending on when you catch it. I think it's a great investment, especially if you have a tablet collecting dust, because what else are you going to do with a fucking tablet? But yeah, I read a couple of these comics, like a couple of these issues a while ago, because there was a specific issue I wanted to read. And I was like, I got to get back to this, because this seems real odd. But yeah, man, if you are a comic book person and you're into like ironic humor and just stuff like that, I am shocked that these old Captain Americas haven't been mined to death and made into memes by young people. So this might be my ticket to fame.
I love it. I love how, you know, before this whole MCU thing and comics becoming the main deal for in pop culture, it was like it was hidden. It was like these guys were all working in secret. So they were doing the most bonkers, bizarre, strange, childish, you know, twisted, just we were talking about it in the Discord. We're talking about like the Beyonder.
Yeah.
And Secret Wars 2. Beyonder is ridiculous. He looks like David Hasselhoff or someone like that, or the Brady dad, but wearing like like power suit shoulders, like big giant shoulders, and he drives a flying Lamborghini. It makes no sense at all. And there was all kinds of stuff like that going on that's just really half-assed, but they had probably a deadline. We were talking about the Frank Miller RoboCop, which is way later. That is absurd. You read that now, it makes no sense at all what they were trying to do with it. It's like there's parodies of Morton Downey Jr. and like Bernie Getz type of stuff. Like the way we thought about things in the 80s is a complete, I mean, and it was all of us. Like everybody liked Morton Downey Jr. back then. You know, everyone liked that shit. But if you thought about any of it now, if you go back and look at any of it now with the way we're living now and the things that we're fighting for and things that we're really angry about now, it is absurd. And his comic had that kind of stuff as the heroic stuff that, you know, lashing out against homeless guys, like beating up homeless people, like just murdering anybody who was on the fringes of society and like fighting against, you know, anybody with a sort of a gender thing or like it's a major comic. It's a thing you could still find on Amazon.com right now. You can buy this thing. And it doesn't make any sense to me that it was that recent, that it made it that far. And it took all the way until everyone was like, oh, Marvel, yeah, we're going to use that for everything now. And they're like, oh, shit. And they're like desperately trying to hide some of these things under the bed and not let anybody see what the crazy shit they were doing for the last 45 years.
Yeah, I'm sure somebody will make a stink one day about some of these comics and they'll be pulled. Like, if you look at Marvel Unlimited, they have pretty much any big comic you could think of. They do have most of the full runs, but there will be every once in a while like an issue pulled for some reason. Like, speaking of which, I don't think they have the issues where Punisher becomes a black man. I think they pulled those. And I could understand that. So yeah, I think there's some touchy stuff they actually do pull. But yeah, if you guys have Marvel Unlimited or you just know how to steal comic books, just definitely check out the Mark Gruenwald run of Captain America if you're into that type of you know, humor that's not supposed to be there, because it is is really, really something.
Yeah.
My last thing is, again, we're going to get back to Cannibal Corpse. I treated myself when I finished this project of buying the Cannibal Corpse Centuries of Torment DVD set. As soon as I hit purchase on this $23 DVD, which it's used, I think it's way more expensive new, but as soon as I hit $23, I saw that it was all free on YouTube. So I was really bummed that I bought this. The fucking the main thing, which is 3 hours, and then all the bonuses are up there too. And it's not even illegal; it's on Metal Blade's YouTube site, so they are the ones supporting this. But I was really bummed. But then it came in the mail, and it's in like a rainbow foil cover, and it's like holographic, and it's embossed. It's like, it's really fancy. So I didn't mind buying it. I finally watched it this weekend, and it's like the most thorough band documentary there's ever been, because it's 3 hours long, and it's before anybody really knew how to edit that stuff, because it's 2008. Mm-hmm. So it's like literally like every especially for the Chris Barnes era, it's like literally every fact. There is like 5 minutes of all their friends talking about like one specific flyer that they made, and it's like it's legitimately like 5 minutes of that. Like it's so much minutia that no one needs. But you know, I do recommend it to anybody who has any interest in the band, or even at least the first half for people who have any interest in like the growing burgeoning death metal scene when they came up, because it has a lot of interesting stuff in it. But I just wanted to point out a few things from this that I learned. First is not something I learned, but I did forget that that Cannibal Corpse was originally from Buffalo. And once all of them and their friends started talking in those Buffalo accents, it really brought me back, because it's not like everybody in upstate New York has that certain accent. It's just more pronounced in Buffalo, I think. It was like eating some of my mom's cooking, down home cooking or something. Like, it like gave me a comforting feeling in my stomach. Like, yeah, I haven't heard this accent in a long time. It was pretty great.
There's actually a great wall that you cross first. Like, if you drive through Western New York, first you hit the sort of like the Rochester-ish area. And then the accent gets almost like Fargo. It gets like really like sharp and hard. And then it kind of tapers back down to Buffalo work, because they're getting towards.
I always compared it to like, it's like 75% Midwestern and like 25% Canadian.
Yeah, it definitely is.
It's that little Canadian seasoning on top of it that really makes it like a very distinct accent.
Yeah, they watch all Canadian TV. Like all the channels there are just Canadian channels, and it's what they grow up with. Yeah.
So they talk all fucked up, but but yeah, so that's comforting. Overall, because Corpse Grinder is a talking head, even one of the Chris Barnes stuff. I assume at this point in time they all hate each other, but I think at this point in 2008 when they recorded this, that they are still somewhat cool. Like I think Chris Barnes and maybe the guitarist Rob are in the same scenes, but the rest of the guys are not in the scenes with Chris Barnes. But I think they're cool enough to all be in the doc. But so Corpse Grinder is like a talking head, even for the parts he's not in. Overall, I think he is like, it seems like it would be really cool to hang out with Corpse Grinder. He just seems like a big child that is a nerd and just into silly stuff. So I would hang out with Corpse Grinder. I finally got to hair from Vincent Locke himself, the cover artist of all these Cannibal Corpse records. It made me feel really bad because in my little write up, I was pretty harsh on Vincent Locke, and I learned that I don't think it's all his fault. He shows off like a lot of his art, and it seems like a lot of the non Cannibal Corpse stuff is basically a more well done version of the stuff he's done for Cannibal Corpse in the Corpse Grinder years. Like it seems like he has more time to like work on it. And it's like this really strange thing, like straight up, I don't know if they met him yet, but in 2008, they still hadn't met this guy. He is responsible. He is like at least 10% of Cannibal Corpse. And they never met him. Like they just never took the time out to stop at Vince's house and say, hey, what's up, man? And they just said it's never worked out. That's weird. I could see where a disconnect could be there, where you have this man like relying on your whole visual image and you've never even had like coffee with him. That's weird. There's things like they're talking to something like a Metal Blade rep, and she's like, yeah, Vince works so fast, and that's not really like a compliment. You shouldn't that's not really a compliment.
Vince, you got 2 weeks. Take another few days, man.
They're like, oh, yeah, he works so fast. He'll give us 3 ideas, a lot of sketches, and it's like, yeah, it's not great. And there's a part where for the Bleeding, which I didn't review, but it's the last Chris Barnes record. Even on that, Chris Barnes is like, I didn't like the original cover, but I was too afraid to tell him. So we just use something else instead. And it's just like, dude, what the fuck? So and it says like, you know, up until that point, Vince only talked to Chris Barnes, and then he left the band. And so they just passed him off to Phil, the drummer. I think that Phil's the drummer. And so, they had like no connection at all. So now I completely understand why their all their covers are kind of half-assed, because they have like no connection at all. He's basically, it's like really like an employee client connection, and that's real odd for such a band like that. And I'll say like they show off all of the censored covers and all of like the special covers they've had for like different countries and stuff, and they're all so much better than the actual covers they use for the most part. So it's just so strange. I do feel bad about ragging on the guy in my thing, but I don't know, I think their art should be a lot better than it is.
He's like Noel Fielding in the IT Crowd. He's just been forgotten in the basement. He's just making covers. No one bugs him. No one talks to him.
Yeah, I mean, they talk to him in the thing, and he's like such a soft-spoken guy, too. So it's just, I don't know. It's weird. Hang out with Vince, Cannibal Corpse. You got to hang out with him.
Maybe he sucks.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they hate him. I don't know. The last thing I just wanted to bring up from the documentary is that I don't know how well-known this is. I think you might have to be a hardcore Cannibal Corpse head. Actually, I guess you don't, because I think the guy was on the first couple records, but they had an original guitarist that was on the first couple records in the demo, I guess. And I think once they started to get to the point where they can almost quit their jobs and live off Cannibal Corpse, they were like, you're not cutting the mustard, dude. You're out of the band. And he was so fucked up over it, he just never played guitar again, and he never talked to them again. Like, but as of 2008, they had no idea where he was or like what he was up to. And of course, the internet found out that he's a golf instructor now, which is a sharp turd from Cannibal Corpse. But it just really bummed me out thinking, like, I don't know if we've talked about a record on the show yet like that, but I'm sure we'll at least get to it at one point where we'll talk about a band who got like something happened, like their original guitarist got kicked out and got so discouraged he never played music again. And it's a real bummer thing. And I mean, I can imagine being a band that like Cannibal Corpse, where you're just like, none of those dudes ever imagined of being wealthy enough to do a band as a job. So I can't imagine getting to that point and then being like, yeah, dude, you're out. So I can imagine being that discouraged, but.
He really turned into a golf instructor too. You look at the picture
looking up on the internet. He's a very golf instructory looking dude. I guess lastly, I didn't know they're playing here March 1st. I doubt I'll go, but I kind of do want to go just because like the fucking, all the bands under them are shit I would never want to see in my life. But it's like, it's $27. It's on a Tuesday, which is the only part that sucks. But if I could time it out, if I could figure out the time where I could just show up and just watch Cannibal Corpse and leave, I might do it just to say I did it.
Well, speaking of areas where people were never meant to look, a lot of death metal DVDs are this way. Like if you find them and you find the ones with documentaries or interviews of the bands, man, that's really a hidden world. You're not like the average world is not supposed to watch any of those. The only one that I can remember off the top of my head, it's not even that crazy, but there's an old Deicide one that I have that I've watched numerous times because Steve Shine, the drummer, is like a gun nut. You know, they're all from Florida. Yeah. So they're like, some of these people are like, they're hillbillies and stuff like that, or just, you know, swamp guys or whatever. Like who's the guy that's on Howard Stern there? I'm blanking on his name.
Baba Booey?
No. The drummer from Iced Earth.
Rich Christie.
And shit. Yeah, Rich Christie. He's a fucking swamp man. Like swamp man who like grew up trapping rodents and shit like that. And like, that's the way a lot of these guys are. And Steve Isham is a gun nut. And it was at a time where I think a lot of us weren't really interfacing with that side of the world because it wasn't like an important faction of government yet.
Yeah.
It wasn't really like a threat to your everyday life. And, you know, and it's all of a sudden, like they're just talking to Glenn Benton. And then the next scene, there's like these moody shots of Steve out there, like blasting shotguns off on his property and stuff like that. And that's all he wants to talk about is his guns. And he's surrounded by them like Game of Thrones. Like they're just all bristling around him and shit. Like it just blooms up out of the documentary and it's divorced from all the other content. Like he's just not in their social circle anymore. He's just this armed individual who shows up to play drums for them once in a while. But Mike, as you were saying, you were talking about how, you know, band members who are maybe left behind by something, they never play again. Would you sing in a band again?
I mean, not at this age. I mean, I would have at the time, like, you know, it's if you're in the prime of your life and you're just like, you know, I would do it again. But yeah, not at this age.
I think we have a lot of friends who put their guitars in the case 25 years ago after like the last time we jammed with them or something. And I mean,
it's a little different for the music we talk about and the music we're involved in. But if you're on that cusp of just like almost literally making it and.
Yeah.
Especially during then in the early 90s. Like now that's like, even if people don't say it's the goal now, it is the goal. But in the early 90s, it certainly wasn't the goal. So it's probably a real gut punch.
It's almost like, you know, like a lot of people they skate really well when they're young and then they put the skateboard away and don't do it anymore. Yeah. And I definitely have like friends who played very well, like put a lot of time into getting good at guitar and then got their engineering job or whatever, and that was it. The guitar just went on the shelf, and they just talk about it to friends once in a while, but I haven't touched it in 30 years.
I'm fine with that.
Probably made the right decision.
I like doing something new every 5 years, so I get it. Yeah. So whatever. I guess we should get to the show now that we're half an hour into it, but tonight's episode is about a band named Street Trash and their record Five Dirty Fingers from 2004. Yes, 2004. This was a band from Long Beach, California area. And I guess just put it all on the line. I saw this record while I was looking for records and I was like, I got to get this for Scott because Scott always makes fun of pizza skateboard hardcore. And this is literal pizza skateboard hardcore. Once we'll get into the actual cover of the record. In the layout section, we'll talk. That's probably going to be the most interesting part of the whole record review. But yeah, so I was like, I got to get this because Scott's going to love it because he loves this stuff. And so I bought it. But at the same time, I was like, because I remember Street Trash and I remember them being kind of like a very buzzworthy band. And they have like a few 7 inches and technically a 12 inch, but I think it's like one of those 12 inches that's like a lot of empty space because there's only like 12 songs on it and their songs are like a minute long. So I think there's a lot of empty space on that 12 inch. But so I was like, oh, they're probably a little too big. But if you search for those band on the internet, there's not really a lot. Like it's pretty empty. So they're fairly forgotten. So I was like, yeah, it's close enough. We could do it. So that's why I chose this. This was their final 7 inch before that 12 inch. And that 12 inch was a few years later from what I gathered. They were a band from between 2003 and 2004 and then broke up for at least a couple years, maybe a year or so, and then got back together. I don't know how if it was like very part-time or full-time or what, but I know they did not have the same buzz that they had in 2004, that's for sure, because I did not really hear about them after this first blast of 7 inches. And then, you know, I guess they broke up again. Luckily for us, there was somebody who uploaded one of these songs on YouTube and basically wrote their entire biography. So I'm just going to read that. It's from TK1969 OK on YouTube. I'm just going to summarize. He said, "Street Trash was probably my favorite hardcore band growing up as a kid." That's weird. The band also had some great cover art thanks to the skills of lead singer Josh Grelick. As a matter of fact, I have a portrait he did on my wall. Okay. The band has since long broken up, so you just have the recordings to remember them by. They played their last show at the Orphans when I was deployed to Iraq, because this guy's in the Marines. Mike Shelbourne, he's the drummer, has been one of my favorite drummers since discovering him. As you can see, he's a phenomenal drummer, and he's still got quite the chops. He would get hooked up to play in jail weddings and Gestapo Kazi and God knows what else. Andy Anderson started Sumerian Axe post-Street Trash with the former drummer of the Orphans. The lead singer of the band, Ryan Harkins, started a burger truck, which eventually became a world-famous restaurant called Grill 'Em All, which I've heard of. I was going to try and get a burger named after Virtual Pros there, but it never worked out. Maybe for a 7-inch club.
Now, there's someone who made the right decision.
Andrew King moved on to play in an excellent psych rock band called Crystal Antlers. I told him I ended up listening to him while trying out jeans at an Urban Outfitters, and I don't think he took that comment very well. He told me he didn't think I was all that punk rock. Dude, I joined the Marines. Like, I fucking care about being punk anymore. Josh Grelick, the singer, still likes to paint and draw and what else. He played in the Mecca Highs. They're all right. I just happen to like Street Trash a lot more. So that's pretty much the end of important stuff there. He'd also... It didn't include John, the other guitarist, which is the only guy who probably did more notable stuff, which he was the main guitarist for the band Knife Fight, which was definitely a very, very well-lauded band back then. I don't know if the kids remember them, but he seemed to be doing that parallel with Street Trash. Street Trash seemed to be his more jokey band. Street Trash, we'll get into it music-wise, but they are definitely in the wacky hardcore vein. And that's pretty much their story. They have like a... like a show review where it talks about them being wacky and I don't know about breaking stuff, but you know, sounding like they could come close to breaking stuff if they play a show. So they're totally one of those bands.
There was a whole kind of whirlwind of bands who had very immediate names at the same time, like Coke Bust and Sex Positions. And this band would have just, even Knife Fight, it would have just all fallen in. The only name that I really liked back then was Shark Attack. I was like, that's a cool name.
Yep.
And I didn't like the band. And that's why it took me a long time to get into Fucked Up, because I was like, they're just another one of those bands. And, you know, I just didn't go for it. It wasn't my thing. And this band fell into that exactly. I didn't find anything groundbreaking about these guys. You covered most of it with that one little write-up, or that guy covered most of it for us. The singer Josh Grelick, he still has an Instagram with his artwork. It's still similar to this, but he's a pro now. He worked or worked for Hurley, you know, the snowboard, skateboard, surfing apparel company. Drummer is in a lot of stuff as usual, because, you know, shockingly, because you can apply drums to almost anything. So drummers get to be in everything for as long as they live. We've actually just been talking recently about how hardcore drummers are getting poached by mainstream acts, because that means you get to absorb a dude with street cred, and he's going to be able to play your drum parts because they're basic bitch beats. And it's like, this guy does blast beats all night. He's in a bunch of stuff, Mike Shelbourne, and his discogs might contain the only two things of this whole episode that I didn't think were that bad, which was Frontier Club. It was kind of like a post-punky, nervy rock thing, and Neighborhood Brats. Now, I know what you're going to say, Neighborhood Brats. Scott, there's no way. There's no way that you like some sort of like whiteout on leather jacket band like Neighborhood Brats. But they're not what they sound like. They're just kind of like it's a girl singing over kind of pop punk. So it sounds like the Go-Go's, and I love the Go-Go's. So they sound like the Go-Go's. I did a lot of Hail Mary Googling to find anything about these guys, you know, but the name is Street Trash. Yes. Google just barfs if you give it a name like that. There's nothing, and there's a famous cult horror movie called Street Trash, so you're not going to find shit, because there's already t-shirts for that movie, more than there will ever be for this band. There's like so many t-shirts out there, so there's not much. But I did find their Facebook, their old Facebook, which has a lot of stuff on it, and it had a video of them. So I did get to see a couple of live videos, and they were, you know.
Where they throwing root beer on people and stuff like that?
Yeah, they're wacky. There's a we'll get to a little bit later. It's kind of in my summary, but yeah, they're wacky.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that they named their band Street Trash a little before that movie became accessible to people again. Yeah. Like, I have been a Cretan in my entire life, so I saw Street Trash when I was like 10 years old. But it was like a movie that was it took a minute to get on DVD. So that was how I was like, oh, they named their band after that movie that I liked when I was a kid. They're probably pretty cool. No, not really, but I mean, they even use the same font or the same logo, basically. So, but then I think like a year after they're kind of buzzy, the movie hit DVD and everybody else was like, oh, they're based off of this wacky movie. So I get it. This was on My War Records, which was not around for a totally huge long time, but put out some pretty monumental records in that fast hardcore vein. They put out 1997, they put out Rain on the Parade, which the LP, which I for some reason remembered liking, and then I was like, oh, let me check that out. I put it on, and I don't think I like this record. I don't think there's any point in my life where I would like music that sounded like this, so I think I just was getting them mixed up with another band, or maybe there's like a special song or there's I liked or something, but I couldn't find anything. They put out the very popular Shark Attack Blood in the Water. Pretty sure at least one of the guys in Shark Attack has questionable spicy politics now, so I don't really give a shit about them. And then like stuff like Violent Minds and Knife Fight, which again were bands that were definitely had a following in the early 2000s, and like I said, I don't know, it's fucking almost 20 years later, I don't know if kids still like think they're great or what, or if it's just only old people that like them. But yeah, then they peaced out in 2004, no reissues, nothing like that. That was it for My War.
The only thing I noticed was that the first record has to be some kind of an anomaly, because it's 97 and then nothing really happens for a while, and it's Rain on the Parade, who is kind of decent youth crew, and it doesn't seem like it should be on this label. As far as I could tell, this label exists to put out Shark Attack, because there's lots and lots of Shark Attack on this label, and that's about it. It's ever since 2001.
I assume that Rain on the Parade really bankrupted this dude. Like, I'm sure in 97 he was probably in high school and did not know that a LP would probably cost a lot of money to put out, so, and like to distribute and shit like that, so it probably took
they sent him
back
a test pressing. He's like, what's this?
What am I supposed to do with this? I won 500, not one.
But yeah, I got pre-orders for this, man.
So I assume like he, like 2001 when he came back, he's probably in college or something, and immediately hit big with the Shark Attack, luckily, and got the ball rolling for a little while. So I guess we can get into the actual record. The whole reason I'm doing this is to amuse myself so we could talk about it. I'm flipping through Discogs. I usually look by store. There's usually a couple things that are requested, and then I'll just look through the store, see what else, and I'm hit immediately with the Street Trash cover, which is a literal penis with a face riding a skateboard, and it's coming the name Street Trash right on the cover, and I'm like, Scott has got to hear this. He's going to love it. And then it says the title, Five Dirty Fingers in Pubes. There's pubes all over the place. You flip it around in the back. It says it has a picture of a decapitated guy shitting out of his ass with poop all over the place, which is even worse for me than the other thing. Again, the pube letters are there. Outside of that, the kind of graffiti-ish hand style is pretty good. It's pretty good for Josh. As Scott said, he's still an artist. Scott said it's the same style. I do not agree with that. He's not doing shitting assholes and poop and fucking dick faces and stuff. I don't think he does stuff like that anymore. It's a little more calmer now that he's an older boy. Inside is a collage lyric sheet, which was very big at the time. I think all these fast hardcore bands love the collage style. So we get another one. It's not as disgusting and crazy as you would think it is. You would think they would have like split beaver shots of women and stuff on here, but there's like a brief nipple, and then the rest is just like, you know, some hot girls and like kind of very PG horror photos, and then just the lyrics, which are problematic in 2022. I think Street Trash would be canceled, but I think that's what they're going for. So good job, Street Trash. It took almost 20 years, but you would be canceled if you were a band now. Not in 2004, though. Overall, I mean, you personally, I would look at this and know immediately what this was. So, and I, as much as I hate the artwork of the, at least the subject matter of the artwork, it's done very well, especially for its time. This kind of bold line work was really in for its time. It's when kids at least could afford or got into college where they could start, you know, using their line drawings and touching them up on the computer. And mm-hmm. It seems this guy uses that to great effect. So even though I fucking hate it, I might have to burn this fucking record as soon as this is over to just not have it anywhere near me. It is what it is. I would know exactly what this is for 2004. So job well done.
I have a few hangups. We got time, so I'll just talk about my hangups. We did an All Holes Filled episode about ICP, and I think I discussed how sometimes like dirty language is a little bit too three-dimensional. Like, I think my thought back then was like, here's a juggalo coming off his 12-hour shift at a gas station, smoking his third pack of the day, talking about his nut sack or anything to do with poop. Like, if they start talking about poop, it's just way more real. Like, you can almost feel the smell it, and it's like, it's grosser. It's grosser when that's happening. And we have a friend who self-applied the nickname Pubes, I believe. I don't know if I'm assuming he just made that up for himself, and it was his gimmick, and it probably still is to this day. He used to tag friends' homes with the word pubes, and he used to leave piles of pubic hair places. That makes me fucking gag. That makes me dry heave. Like, it's never been okay for me, Sawyer. If you're listening, it's not okay for me now. It never has been. I'm a guy who prefers to think of me and my friends as like pure smooth cylinders of ceramic. Like, we have no physiology. We don't have buttholes. There's nothing. Until it's time to have some sex, there's no physiology to any of us. So this pubic hair lettering and the shitting corpse is not making me feel cool right now. It doesn't make me feel cool to see this. And I have this other really specific hangup, actually related directly to the cover of this. Have you seen the movie Johnny Dangerously?
Yes, of course.
So there's a cartoon in Johnny Dangerously about the dick, and the dick walks around on his balls.
Yeah.
that makes me double over in discomfort to see like balls as feet. Like, I can't see an anthropomorphic dick walking around on the balls. That mutilates me. So this is a hard one. Like, it's well done, it's well drawn, you know, he's actually got a good hand at all this, and the K-Tel graphics, that's convincingly misprinted. I like that. That's about it. That's about what I like about the record. It's the yellow and black label. I feel terrible.
That's the cover. I guess we get in the music now. It's three very quick songs, sort of three and a half songs. I don't know why they released this. It's very strange for a band that does 1 minute long songs to do basically almost a blank 7-inch, but maybe that was part of their agenda. Maybe it was when they were breaking up and that's all they had, but I cannot imagine going into the recording studio with only three tracks. And that's why I wasn't really sure about this band, because their first two 7-inches have a lot of the same tracks on it too. So I think these guys just recorded like eight songs and called it a day and just released like three 7-inches off of eight songs or something. But either way, the first song is called Five Dirty Fingers. So this is going to be very quick. So this is wacky hardcore. I don't think people make wacky hardcore. This was really made me think about this specific time. Like, I was not a teen in 2004, but I was still a young person. I never liked stuff like this. I hate being wacky. I think I think, like, you know, there's a time and place. You'd be wacky with your friends, doing wacky shit, going out, doing wacky stuff, going on stage, being wacky. No. That is, if you have time to be wacky, you have time to make better music. And that's that. Like, you don't have time to be wacky if you're playing music. You leave that to your fucking wacky friends with no talent, and they could be wacky in the crowd. But, like, being the band and being wacky is not cool. I don't think this exists anymore. I think wacky hardcore turned into mysterious guy hardcore. I think it kind of mutated into that. And I like that much better, because at least it's, like, foreboding. And it's like, okay, you have moved all of your wacky energy into something that's a little like silly, but still like scary a little. And I appreciate that a little more. So I'm glad it kind of mutated in that. I know there's like some of these bands I didn't mind, so I wasn't sure about Street Trash, but I don't really love this. It just sounds like a fast hardcore, like literal, very fast, wanting to be like Bad Brains type of hardcore. There's probably more. More references I can make if I listen to this style, but I don't. So I'm sure there's some fucking other bands. And I think, so I was trying to think of like how this happened. And I think I pinpointed to 2001 or 2002 is when, I think the book preceded it by a couple of years, but 2001, 2002, I think, is when the American Hardcore documentary came out. And so for all the people who couldn't buy the book or just were too dumb to read it, now have like a video of it and they can watch it. And I think that like sparked a lot of young people's like interests into things like being wacky and like being like, you know, real hardcore where you're fucking dangerous and stuff like that and like shocking and stuff like that. And I don't think a lot of these bands understood that it was shocking in fucking 1983 when you're showing up to like a fucking teen center and you look like you came out of the garbage. And you just play like loud, disgusting music to people who've never heard it. Like they've only heard fucking David Cassidy. And then you're just playing like some like disgusting music to them. That is shocking. When you're doing it fucking 15 years later or 25 years later, whatever it is, well, when the internet exists, it's not shocking anymore. Like no one's going to a hardcore show unless they're like 8 years old and being like, "Ooh, that's crazy. That guy's pouring root beer on everybody. Oh my God." Like, it's just like, it doesn't work anymore, but it did work. Cause a lot of these bands, this was the popular sound at that time, was being shocking and being crazy and wacky. So it worked, but it only worked for those kids who also wanted to buy into that American hardcore documentary dream. Fortunately, there's a lot of us who did not care. So, so luckily this died out after a few years, but that's what this is. I also don't think, because I listen to this when I rip it, I listen to it on my sound bar to my television, because that's what my Bluetooth is hooked up to. And it sounds great. You know, a lot of channels on that thing. And so I don't think you realize exactly how bad this is until you put on some headphones and you really have, you're just really left alone with your thoughts in this music. And this should have been a little, like, the drums are good. What the Marine said is true. The drums are the only thing holding this band together. The guitars could be canceled. I can't believe they just laid down these guitars and was like, that's it. But that's the thing, man. It's not about the record. It's about the live show with these bands. So I get it. I'm going to say overall, even just jumping ahead, because there's only two more tracks, is I don't think this was enough for me to develop a full opinion on this band as a whole. But you know, if I just heard this one song, it's not going to bother me that much. Like it's a minute long and be like, okay. So it's hard for me to form a full opinion on this band, but one song is fine so far.
I'm going to add another ingredient, to the origin story, because I think I'm going to risk some street cred here, but I think a lot of it is from Andrew WK because he came out and he did the party thing and people liked that. And it was good. Yeah. Like the first album was awesome. His first album is strange. It's a very heavy album and he sings like a transformer. He does like these death metal transformer vocals singing about like eating pizza and partying. Yeah. And all of a sudden, like the next day, Tumblr and dinosaurs are on skateboards with flying V guitars and stuff like that. Like that, those went hand in hand. And I don't know if that's the origin or not, but it seems like they coincided. And then what you're saying with the American hardcore and people getting back into sort of rootsier, stripped down hardcore around the same time, they gotta add up to something. But I personally don't have any tools at all to evaluate this music. I have no it's very far outside of my interests, anything I purposely seek out or even endure. Like I would have gone outside So the singer sounds like Johnny Rotten or something like that to me. Like he's got that old, like not screaming, just kind of na-na-na-na-na-na, just the Jello Biafra.
Yeah, very kind of Jello Biafra, very high nasally type of shrill. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a deal breaker or anything. I just don't care about that. Like, I like screaming more for heavy stuff. But, you know, longtime listeners might remember when we started this and when we were doing All Holes Filled, we are like silver lining dudes because we like music. We're looking for more music. We're here to enjoy. So I'll say nice things. The song is coherent. The trashy Emmett Otter rubber band bass that's happening in this is so dirty and so gross that it's actually kind of good. Like it's makes it sound kind of cavernous, like some noise is happening in the background. I dig that. Gives it like an airplane hangar sound or something like that. And the singer sounds like Eddie Deason, who, you know, he's taken a turn for the villainous recently, so you can't really ride for him. But once upon a time, he was in Midnight Madness. That's at least my sixth favorite movie, so I got to give him credit for his influences.
Okay. Then you flip the side, and the first track on side B is Don't Need It. This is a cover by the Bad Brains. I'm not a person who actively listens to the Bad Brains. It's always been one, like, I've always had a chip on my shoulder when it's come to the seminal hardcore, just because it's like people still, like, there's people that only listen to these five bands. They listen to fucking Bad Brains, Black Flag, Minor Threat, and I don't know. I don't fucking know. I think that's it. I think I'm probably missing one. I can't think of it. Ramones, yeah. But, you know, and they'll still post on their Facebook stuff every day, like, oh, look, it's fucking Ian McKay, but they put him on a cake. And it's just stuff like that. Like, oh, it's the fucking Bad Brains, but it's on a tie. I'm going to buy it. Oh, it's Cufflinks, Bad Brain Cufflinks. And it's like, it's the only fucking four bands they've ever heard in the genre. And so I've just, like, I've written them off. I've given those bands to those people. I don't need those bands, those people in my life. But at the same time, I think Bad Brains is amazing. Like I never really listened to them, but if you put on a Bad Brains record, you're just like, I can't believe these dudes were making this insane music back then. And I've always had a rule for years and years, that you should never cover the Bad Brains or the Refused, because both of those bands, you're never going to top them, what they did. It's two very weird bands, but there's just two bands I've seen. Multiple, I mean, obviously with Refuse, it's just that one song that bands cover. But but with Bad Brains, you know, they have a myriad of songs that people cover. Every single time, it sucks. And I was like, okay, well, you know, these guys are kind of, that's their vein, that's their deal. Maybe this will be good. The first playthrough over my 5-channel sound bar, I was like, yeah, it's not too bad. And then I listen to the Bad Brains song, and I listen back to this one, and it's terrible. It is, again, just a shitty fucking Bad Brains cover. It sucks. It's just, you're not doing, like, I don't know, man. Unless you're going to try and top the Bad Brains, which I don't think. I'm sure there's obviously musicians out there that could, and I think all the people that could probably have no interest in covering the Bad Brains. So it's just never going to happen, so stop. I don't know if people still try and cover them, but just fucking stop. It's never going to happen. I do got to say, the vocals, I don't know how I feel about these vocals, because I kind of like them, but at the same time, I kind of hate when people do cartoon voices on purpose. Like, Jello Biafra naturally sounds like that. I kind of hate his voice, honestly, but...
But he talks like that.
But he talks like that, though. That's his voice. So when you're just like, oh, I'm going to do that, and you show up to practice, and you're like, yo, 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 it's just kind of like, dude, you're doing like a fucking, what's the fucking Hanna-Barbera cartoon guy with a dog?
I was going to say Deputy Dog, but it's
not. No, it's like Muttley or something, and the little short guy who's...
Yeah, Snidely Whiplash. Like,
Snidely Whiplash, yeah. Like when you show up to practice, talking like fucking Snidely Whiplash. That's, I don't know. It kind of takes me out of it. So, It sounds cool, but like I said, it's like if this dude just, you know, if he had a voice like me and he did that, I wouldn't be cool with it. But if he actually has this kind of register and that's how he always talks, then I'm cool with it. But it's but yeah, don't cover the bad brains.
Yeah. How, if someone wants to do a punk band and do like a Paul Lynde impression over the top of it, let me know, because I'll give that some time. yeah, so I like Bad Brains, but I got into them through Quickness, which I don't think is a path anybody recommends or takes.
I mean, a lot of people our age did, because that's the first time I heard them too. So
yeah, yeah, but like you, I'm not a dude who gets real breathless about them. People keep posting that same the ROIR, RAR, however you pronounce that. Like they always post that one, and I know it's a cool record cover, so you can have it. That's fine, but. You know, like I'll still talk to anybody about the first Testament album, so I get it. But I also haven't talked about it in a few years. It's been a while since I've brought up my old favorite albums. But yeah, you know, like they're very capable, like technically capable musicians, like beyond what this band is capable of doing. And I think they look like a dunk sack of shit when they show up, like, oh boy, we can do it too, and start trying to play and try to speed it up a little bit. But it's, you know. The original version is pretty much just as fast as this and just as kind of brutal and messy and everything as this. But the beginning is tricky. Like they're playing a tricky riff and they're doing it. And they even did it again for you on Black Dots at halftime. So you could learn. Like here it is in case you want to learn it. Here it is at halftime. And these guys are just like baloney wiggling their fingers on the guitar. It's like an approximation of the riff, and it makes me uptight. When I listen to it, I'm like, you're not playing it right. Stop. It makes me feel weird, and I'm not even like a gatekeeper about the Bad Brains. Yeah. I don't care, but you're fucking up. And then they get to the part later, they play the solo, and I think he plays it right. So you could. Like, are you sucking on purpose because you played it right earlier? It just makes me tense. This makes me tense. I don't need it. I don't need it.
Yeah, don't need it, yeah. Guys, don't cover the Bad Brains. Just stop. It's not worth it. Cover Street Trash. Cover Street Trash covering the Bad Brains. And you can improve upon it, maybe.
Yeah.
The final song is Mongoloids, which I don't cancel me. I didn't name the song Mongoloids. The song also drops the R-bomb again. Yeah. Simpler times, 2004, I guess. It's about a differently abled person having sex with this singer's sister, I guess. I guess it's something like that. this song is it's a little more menacing than the initial track. It starts off a little more menacing. I like that. You can hear a little proto Mysterious Guy hardcore in that.
Yeah.
So you know I. This is how basically the record ends. This song's like 50 seconds long, and then it goes into a weird jam session that I assume is there just to annoy people. It's what bands do to be annoying when they're on stage. It is a tried and true, we're being annoying thing that bands do. So I assume that was their point to it. So, you know, I hated this overall, but if the later stuff had a more darker edge to it, I probably wouldn't hate it. So I also wouldn't count them out. I don't think I'm going to seek that other stuff out. I don't think it's on Spotify, and I don't even think it's... I think it might be on YouTube. I'm not sure, but you know, maybe this was their worst shit that they did. But either way, I like this song a little more than the first song, but not by much.
I was really worried this was going to be a piece of shit Devo cover on my birthday. That you were going to give this to me on my birthday, but you know, instead they wrote their own 30 seconds of stupid bullshit, so I don't have to get into that. I think this is dumb. I feel empowered to say it's dumb because, like, the whole thing's not my thing. But the first song is also not my thing, but it seems like it was written on purpose. You know, it has, like, some structure to it, and the lyrics aren't exactly... They're not, like, Dostoevsky or anything, but they have something like self-respect. The guy sat down with a pen and was like, I'm going to write, like, some ideas. And this is just really stupid. This song could have been, like, Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers for 45 seconds. He's just saying dumb shit.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm mystified how you got to the studio. How did you even get to the studio if you're this dumb? You went in to record this bullshit and you're so stranded mentally that you had to write these lyrics. Like anything would have been a little better than this. I don't like it. And the R word was not cool even in 2004. Yeah. Next lifetime, guys, try a little harder than this one.
Yeah. So that's it. I did manage to come up with a fifth tier for my rating system. So if you guys are not familiar, I like to review the record, the full record, the full experience, not just the music, but the cover, the possible investment opportunities in buying the record, all of that stuff. So my five tier system is just throw it in the trash. You see it, just throw it immediately in the trash. The new tier is not worth owning, but worth streaming. So that's a little new part. But then the third is buy it in the bargain bin. Fourth is buy it for full price. And of course, fifth is buy it for collector's prices. You just absolutely need to own it for no matter what it costs. This yeah. one, I'm going to, it's weird because it would technically be 3 out of 5, but I'm going to say buy this on the bargain bin. If you're like me and you have aversion to penis art and shitting art, you're going to want to maybe put it away immediately, put it in the closet, but
slip it into a dark cover.
But we are hitting the 20-year mark of this type of wacky fast hardcore. It might make a comeback. So this literal dollar record might be $20 in a couple years. So for no musical reasons buy this, but I'm just saying if you see it and you are an investor in records, you might want to pick this up for a buck just because it might make you few more than a buck in a couple years.
So as I've said, this genre is a bit of a puzzle for me. I don't naturally enjoy it. I find it when it's bad, I find it aggravating instead of just like not my thing. I can relate to this kind of music if the band has a story where they transmogrify into like a goth band or something different, or I don't know if there's something to it, but just showing up as a goofy punk band, I find it more annoying than anything else. But I did find a live video of them. It sounds way harsher. They're more like, they're heavier, they're more distorted, the guy's shouting a little bit, and they have a crazy man singer. He attacks the crowd with the mic, the drum set collapses, and the drummer keeps playing with no drums. He's just sort of playing the air. That's cool. And someone is throwing fireworks, of course, at them while they play, and they don't stop. They don't even notice. They're so used to having fireworks thrown, they're not even looking up. And they don't look like they don't look like Suicide Commandos or anything like that. They're just kids.
Those like frail boys, yeah.
Yeah, they're just regular boys, but they're hard as nails, playing as like actual explosions are happening within the range of their bodies. So in that context, that's fine. Go ahead, have your punky fun, guys. I don't see eye to eye with you, and I never will. And I really don't see this eye to eye with like Sunday record Instagram dads who relax in their studies listening to this kind of music. Like they post the cover of these kind of bands and they're like sitting down, I guess scratching their chin, smoking a pipe. Like, what are you doing? What does it look like? Turn the camera around next time. Show me what you're doing when you're listening, when you're cleaning your house, listening to this kind of music or something. But if you leave your house, if you risk the integrity of your skull to see something this dumb in person, you got my blessing. I think that, life is short. Have some fun. But you're getting my first zero. Because this item has no value to me whatsoever. So hopefully that's a firecracker you can survive and keep raging through. Good luck, guys.
Yeah, 0 dick skateboards out of 5 for you. Happy birthday, Scott. I'm glad you enjoyed your present so much. If you guys want to reach out to us, you can do so. First 7-Inch Club on Instagram, on Gmail, on YouTube, First 7-Inch Club Facebook. You can do it all. So until next week, we'll talk to you later.
Adoy! Look at me! Adoy!